Okay, ladies, let us begin. Parshas Va'era. I want to do a little something different than what we normally do. But hopefully the majority of what we'll be learning is our standard going through the text. There's a certain section that I want to learn with you this morning on page 324. But before we actually start the Chumash and the story that we're going to read, the section of the story that we're going to read, I want to start with a small piece of Gemara that the Daf Yomi actually just covered about a week ago that discusses davening. As we know, in the midst of the Shemona Esrei, there are a number of circumstances where a person is obligated to bow down as they daven the Shemona Esrei. The beginning of the Shemona Esrei, you bow down. Towards the end of the Shemona Esrei, we bow down. And the Gemara has a line in which it discusses the nature of how one should bow down during those instances. And the Gemara says a very, I don't want to say, it's not strange in terms of what's being said. It's a little strange in how it's being said. The Gemara says it's on the top of your sheet. The Gemara says as follows, Rav Sheshes, the Talmudic sage at Rav Sheshes, Kikara, when he would bow down, Kara Kichizra, he would bow down. Now, Kichizra is the Aramaic word for a staff, like a rod. He would bow down like a rod. Kikazokif, when he would stand up, when he would straighten up, Zokif Kichivra, he would straighten up like a snake. So it's almost like a play on word that the Aramaic picked up on the two similar words, chizra, chivya. He would bow down like a rod, like a staff, and come up like a snake. Down like a staff, up like a snake. Says Rashi, explaining the Gemara, what did he mean that he would go down like a rod? So Rashi explains, it was quickly without delay. Like when you throw down a staff, the whole thing is thrown down in one shot. You can't throw down half a stick. It all went down, so he would go down, meaning if I were to demonstrate when he would go down straight, without any motion, all his entire torso would go down in one shot. And when he would go up, it would be like a snake. So a snake, the classic image of a snake is with its head, it's coiled around, and its head is picked up. See, he would, as he's down like this, he would first pick up his head and then come up like a snake. So the Gemara teaches the way that one would choreograph, so to speak, his bowing down at the times that you bow down, straight down like a staff, and like as on the way up like a snake. First you pick up your head, and then you come up. And Rashi explains that it shouldn't look like a burden. Like as you're coming back up, like you want to show the alacrity. Bowing down, I'm excited to show my submission and humility. And then as I come back up, I don't want to show like, oh, I can't wait to get out of that position. So I come up slowly like a snake, head first, in a way that there's not a burden. I really wish I could stay in that submissive posture the whole day. I can't. So that's how I do. Now, so that, the teaching, is very, it makes a lot of sense, very logical. The structure of the teaching, the way that the Gemara often does so, very interesting usage of the imagery and the words, down like a staff, up like a snake. Now,
but it's not only the physical part, it's the mental part, your state, from being submissive to going up, it's like re-entry.
Yeah, a little bit.
So that too has to be slowly.
Yep, 100%. Now, happens to be Parshas Va'era, but that phrase, down like a staff, up like a snake, should actually conjure up certain images of where we've seen that before. That the sages sort of pick up on an Aramaic word that sounds the same, chivra, chizya, to say like down like a staff, up like a snake. That image is not completely random. We see that actually two separate times, once in last week's Parsha and again in this week's Parsha, where we have the staff-snake combo. And that is, of course, the first time we saw that last week is when Moshe is standing at the burning bush, and as he says, the people may not believe me that I've actually been sent. Give me a sign that I can bring to the people that indeed I have been sent. And Hashem, in fact, gives him three signs that he has been sent. Remember what those three signs were?
Yeah, staff, snake.
The one was, he says, take your staff. What's that in your hand? He says, a staff. Throw it to the ground and it becomes a snake. And that's to show the people, this is real. You were sent by the Creator of heaven and earth who changed this staff into a snake. And if they don't believe you, I have other signs. What? Take a cup of water, pour it on the ground, and it's going to become blood. and put your hand into your cloak, and when it comes out, it's going to be white as a tzaras. Put it back in and it will turn back. Those are the three signs that he sends. So this idea of taking a staff into a snake, already we saw that combo. That was last. It was interesting that the Gemara then should use that phrase and say, go down like a staff and come up like a snake.
Now, in
which... Yeah, on your sheet. Now, the second time that we see it, which is, in my mind, has always been a very troubling episode. We're going to study that this morning, the few verses, which is the second time that we see this idea of a staff to a snake. That is, as we said, page 324. We are now about to enter into the second meeting between Moshe and Aaron and Paro. They met already last week. Moshe returns back to the land of Mitzrayim. He gathers the elders. He tells them great news. Hashem is going to redeem you. The people are excited. They bow down. Moshe and Aaron storm into Paro's palace and they say, let my people go and serve me. And Paro says, Mi Hashem, who is this Hashem? What are you talking about? And they say, we need to leave for 3 days. And Paro says, in short, it must be you guys have too much time on your hands that you're coming with these wild and crazy fanciful ideas of leaving to serve this God. And he takes away the materials of the straw that the Jews needed to build their bricks, but he did not diminish the required quota of how many bricks they needed to do. So now they needed to go gather the material and produce the bricks, and they weren't able to do so, and they are being beaten by the Egyptian taskmasters, and things become terrible. They see Moshe and they despise even seeing him because he actually made things worse. Moshe complains to Hashem and says, why did you send me? Things have only gotten worse since I showed up. And Hashem then begins this week's parsha, really at the end of last week's parsha, says, wait. Yes, it actually got worse, but now you will see how it's going to play itself out. And he now sends Moshe and Aaron back to Paro for meeting number two. Meeting number one did not go so well, and now he's going to send them for meeting number two. Let's take a look. Let's learn those verses in the preparation, and then what will actually happen for the second meeting. We are on verse 8, Pasuk Chet, page 324. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'el Aaron lemor. Hashem now speaks to Moshe and Aaron, says as follows, Ki yedaber aleichem Paro lemor. You're going to come before Paro. Paro is going to say to you, he's going to say, Tenu lachem mofes. Provide a wonder, as you see here translated in Art Scroll. So you're going to show up again, and Paro's going to add. Now, Paro, Hashem is telling Moshe and Aaron, you're going to go, and Paro is going to ask you for a wonder. Now, if we were to stop right here, and we would say, okay, now we got it where we want. The first time, Paro just basically threw him out and said, you have too much time on your hands and made it worse. Now, Paro's saying, give me a sign. Give me some type of wonder.
Now, did he agree to see him again?
Okay, that, Rashi already comments that there's clearly something about Moshe and Aaron's ability to go in and out as they please. Some commentators learned that you see that the Shevet of Levi was actually not subjugated. Some learned that that was part of the miracle, that Moshe simply had the ability to walk in and out with all of his guards and whatever he wanted, he just came and went. But that's a part of the story that's noted by the commentators, that he was able to just simply come and go as he so pleased. But stop the story where we are. Play the role of God, if you will, just for a moment. You're saying to Moshe and Aaron, here's the moment. You're going to show up, and Paro's going to say, give me something. Give me a mofes. Give me a sign. Give me a wonder. And you have in your godly grab bag anything at your disposal for Moshe and Aaron to perform in front of Paro, to display and to show your godliness, and answer his request of give me a sign. You can come up with anything that you want. It's all open to you. Now, without taking all of our time to ask you what you would come up with, but imagining that you did, whatever you would come up with, I imagine would be something that would be a tremendous display of wonder, of miracle, something never seen before, something that would blow the socks off of Paro and his court, that would say, Paro, we're here, We represent the creator of heaven and earth, and we mean business, yeah? So whatever the details of that would be, we could argue, but whatever it would be something that would do that. That would be astounding, awe-inspiring, yeah? So let's read what Hashem sends Moshe and Aharon with. V'amarta, we're in the middle of verse 9, Pasuk Tes. V'amarta el Aharon. This is what you should say to Aharon, Hashem tells Moshe. Kach esmatcha, take your staff, v'hashleich lefnei paro, throw it down before paro, and yehi lisanin, and it will become a snake. Wah. That's what's going to happen.
Magic.
Vayavo, let's see what happens. Did this blow the socks off of Paro? Vayavo Moshe v'Aharon el Paro. So they come armed with this amazing miracle of a staff. And they're going to take this staff and they're going to throw it down before Paro and it's going to become a snake. Now, when they did this in front of the people were like, wow. Moshe performed these three miracles. It worked. They were all in. So they come in and they're ready. They did exactly like they were commanded. Aharon threw down his staff before Paro, and before his court and all of his servants. And it turned into a snake. And what's the big reaction that we've been waiting for now from Paro? Vayikra gam Paro lachachamim velamachshafim. And Paro called his wise men and his sorcerers, Vayasu gam heim chartume mitzrayim bilahatehem kain. And they too, his sorcerers, his wise men, they all did the same thing. They uttered a couple of incantations, and they all turned their staves into snakes. Vayashlichu ish matehu, each one cast down their staff, vayulisaninim, and they all became snakes. Vayivlo matei Aharon es matosam, and then the next stage came, and Aharon's staff then swallowed their staff, so that their staffs all became snakes. Aaron's staff then swallowed. Sounds like Rashi points out, first his snake turned back into a staff, and then it swallowed up all of the others. So that's at least an additional element than what they were originally told to do. Vayechazak lev paro velo shamo alehem, and Paro's heart was hardened and strong, and he did not listen as Hashem had spoken. Okay, now, acknowledging that there was an additional miracle which happened, which was that Aaron's staff swallowed up their staff. So that's new. It always troubled me, and not just me, you'll see the sages as well, that this was the big thing that Hashem decides to send Moshe to town with. You throw your staff down, and it will turn to a snake. Now, Hashem had to have known that all of Paro's men and all of Paro's horsemen were able to do the same thing. This had zero impact on any of them because they said, "Are you joking? That's what you came here with? You threw a staff down and it turned into a snake? We know how to do that." The Medrash, in fact, when it records this, I want to just read you the language of the Medrash, the way the Chazal described this thing. This is not on your sheets in front of you. Oh. The Medrash says as follows, Ba'oso shah hischil paro misachek aleihem. He started laughing. Umikarker acharem kitarnagolas. He was literally cackling like a chicken. Like, that's what you came to my palace with? To throw down a staff and make it into a snake? That's like magician tricks 101. He said, this is the sign of God? He says, listen, a person goes into a town to sell something, so you don't go into the town that produces a certain goods with that good to sell. They make that over there. You can't come into Montreal and say, I want to sell snow. Doesn't work. It's on the streets. Everybody's got it. That's not a commodity. Come here with something new. Says the Medrash. You're going to go to Akko and sell fish. They all fish in Akko. He brought his tinokas. He brought his children from school. He brought his wife. They all came and threw down their staffs and it became a snake. 4 and 5 year old children, says the Medrash, all doing so. So great. Now that leaves us with the question of, well, what in the world then was the purpose of sending that? Now you could say, well, maybe it was for the end, where Aaron's staff then snake turned back into a staff and swallowed them up. But clearly, this was not going to be the type of magic trick, of moface, of wonder that was gonna move them, because they all do that at home. The kids do that. Why did Hashem send that one in the first place? Always troubled me, as like to understand fully. Like, he could have done anything. If he really wanted to do something, you know, there are other tricks in the bag that could have really, really moved them. You know, Paro says, give me a mo face, and this is what he said, something that Paro's going to laugh at. Why? What's the meaning? What's the meaning behind this? I want to just share with you a really interesting approach. I have an old a friend of mine, a member of my shul in Atlanta, wrote this idea up. It's his idea, and I'd just like to share it. A really Barry Afi is his name, Dr. Barry Afi. To share this idea. Now, remember the first time that we saw this trick, this staff snake combo, was with Moshe. What was Rashi there commented? Why that was the specific sign that Moshe was given? The snake is not the first time we've seen the snake in Chumash. Where's the first time we see the snake? All the way back, exactly. The Nachash's Arum was the most conniving, sneaky, wise of all the animals. Wanted it all, wanted Chava, and he ends up, of course, losing everything, as we will see in a moment. Now, Rashi commented in last week's parasha that the reason why Moshe was shown the snake was because he shared a trait with the snake, and it was a little rebuke to Moshe, and said, Moshe, you're standing here, why am I showing you all of these signs? Why did he need all of these signs? Because Moshe had said, people aren't going to believe me. I'm going to show up, and they're not going to believe that you actually sent me. So Hashem said, why are you talking about my people that way? Why are you giving them no credit that they're not going to believe that I sent for them to take them out of Mitzrayim? So one of the signs that he gave Moshe was the snake. And Rashi says, and just like as the snake spoke, Lashon Hara spoke evil about, there's a whole discussion exactly who was speaking evil about Hashem, about Adam, about Chava. You too are now falling prey to Lashon Hara. You're speaking negatively about my people, that you said they're not going to believe me. So there was a sign. It wasn't just a sign that it's real. It was a then subliminal message to Moshe of, watch yourself. Don't talk about my people that way. Similarly with the tzarat as well, that he received tzarat also, which is a classic punishment for Lashon Hara. Now, so to hear, we have a moface. Paro says, give me a moface, a wonder. Now, we would naturally think that the wonder that he's going to be shown should be a wonder of something that's going to blow his socks off, about this is really true, this is God. Maybe there was another sign there, some other meaning beyond just a change of nature, because clearly what Hashem did wasn't something that was magnificent in the realm of magic, that all the Egyptians were doing on their own. Must be something else within it. And I'd like to show you and share with you, as Dr. Yaffe has done, that indeed the sages trace within this another message for us. Take a look on your sheet, the second source there, the Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan was a Aramaic translation of the Psukim, but it added into the translation a commentary. On this verse, when Moshe and Aaron stand before Paro, there might be some extra sheet somewhere along the table somewhere. On this verse, when Moshe and Aaron are sent before Paro and said, throw down your staff and it will become a snake, the Targum Yonasan says as follows, Aaron, take your staff and throw it before Paro and it will become the snake as a symbol, moface, not as just a wonder. Remember, who's the one who said it, that he's going to ask for a moface? That was Hashem telling Moshe and Aaron he's going to ask for a moface. It will be a sign that all the inhabitants of the world will hear the voice of Egypt screaming when I smash them. Just like all the creations heard the voice of the Nachash screaming when I stripped it of its limbs at the beginning. Says Yonasan ben Uziel in his translation and commentary on the Chumash, you know why Moshe and Aaron were sent to change the staff into a snake? The snake did something or suffered through something, and that was when it lost its limbs, because that was its punishment. Al gechoncha, you'll now slither on your belly, meaning very clearly before that point it stood erect on its 2 feet, 4 feet, it somehow it walked, and now it lost it. Apparently, when it lost its arms and legs, says Yonasan ben Uziel, it screamed in pain, and the hint to Paro was, just like the entire animal kingdom heard the suffering of the snake when it lost its arms and legs, you too, Paro, are going to scream when you are smashed in punishment for not sending them out, the way the Nachash was. So that we have a hint here, first step, that the sign of the snake was, we've seen the snake before, we've seen what happened to the snake before, this too will happen to you if you are not careful.
Can I just ask you one question about Nachash, Tanin, it's like different names?
Yes, Rashi comments that the Tanin is the Nachash. Why the Torah uses the word Tanin when Rashi comments it was a Nachash, I'm not sure. Okay. Tanin is also referenced in the beginning of Chumash, the Tanin, were created. Now, where's his source that the Nachash screamed? Where did that come from? So that actually comes from a Medrash. That comes from the sages themselves, and that's in your third source. Very graphic, descriptive Medrash. For those who've been looking ahead, it's totally fine. But let's read it together, because there's a message in here which is of supreme significance. This is back in Bereishis, when the original snake was given its punishment, al gichoincho telech, on your belly you shall go. So the Medrash says as follows, we'll just read the English. At that moment, when Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said those words, on your belly you shall go, the Malachei Hashares, the ministering angels, came down from heaven, the Kotzitzu Yadav Viraglov, and cut off his hands and feet. Vahayokolo Holech, and the voice, the cry of the snake rang out in agony, Misof Ha'olam Vat Sofo, from one end of the universe to the other. Now remember, as is known, when Hashem performed surgery on Adam to take out his rib from which to create Chava, how did he do so? Put him to sleep, and then without any pain or suffering, removed his limb. So his rib. So it's not that Hashem lacked the knowledge for how to perform a surgical procedure without anesthesia in some way to make it in a painless way. That was certainly done. But the Nachash was the ministering angels were sent down to literally to cut off his arms and legs as they were, and put him on his belly, and he screamed. And then the Medrash adds, Bo Nachash lelamed al mapalta shel Mitzrayim. The Nachash came to teach us about Mitzrayim. What connect? All of a sudden the sages see in the Nachash, the snake, and his downfall of losing his arms and legs, that the scream that he would have from that is foreshadowing what will take place in Mitzrayim. Says the Medrash, Reb Asi and Reb Oishia, in the name of Rabbi Acha, said as follows. Hashem said to the Nachash, I made you king over the domesticated and wild animals. Now, let's just take a second and step back for a moment. What does the Nachash lose? Let's go over his punishments and then put back the pieces of who he was beforehand. The Nachash loses, as we've already said, his ability to walk, which means beforehand, he did. What does he now have to eat in his curse? What is his food? What was clearly his food beforehand? Finest delicacies that were known to man was his normal food, and he was now punished. No longer will you eat food, now you're going to eat dust. Before this, how did he communicate with Adam? Spoke to him, he talked, and after, now it's always going to be a hatred between man and between the snake. As the pasuk says, man is going to try to club you over the head, and you're going to try to bite him on his heel. But which had been a civil communication, no longer. The sages describe, what was the snake actually after? He was after Chava, to marry Chava, which we think is bizarre, the snake, but we're thinking of the snake post, no feet, no ability to talk, no ability to eat, like there's no connection. But beforehand, if a snake walked on its feet, ate good food, was interested in pretty women, spoke to man, what was he? Supremely close to man. He would be what we would call, if the Medrash we just read said, the king of the animal kingdom. He was as close to man could be. We've spoken about this before. Rabbi David Foreman, in his whole book, describes really what the snake was pre and post, and that snake was the king of the animal kingdom, and argues with mankind. The only thing that separated mankind from the snake was really that mankind had been given. I'm going to do this. This is really not fair. I'm about to do it. I'm about to take an entire book, which you've actually spoken about at great length, an entire lecture, and condense it to a single phrase, which is really not fair. But I'm going to do it anyway. What distinguished then mankind from the animals? What distinguished them?
Speaking.
No, they both spoke.
They both spoke.
The snake spoke.
Feelings.
What this? Close. How did God communicate to the animal kingdom? Through their intrinsic instinct to do what they needed to do, whatever they felt, they did. When a polar bear would grab a salmon and eat it, that's not a bad thing. That is the nature of how things work. And if a bear would say, I really shouldn't do that, it's not right, we say, no. God gave you the ability to do so, and that's how you're supposed to be. And then God speaks to mankind and says, don't eat that fruit. You want it. I gave you a desire, and I commanded you not to act on the desire, to rule over it. The animal kingdom is never commanded to rule over a desire. A desire that they have is an instinct that they've been born with, which they're supposed to act on. Mankind was instructed and given a commandment from Hashem and said, I know you want certain things, not now, not like this, maybe not ever. And the ability to control and rule over that part of us, but we looked the same. Snake spoke, communicated, walked, ate, liked good women, and at the end of this episode, Hashem says, "We can't, too close, the snake caused all of mankind to sin, you're going to go back and look like, that's the end of it." But until that point, that's what he had. The snake did not have free choice. The snake was basically saying, why are you different than us? The language that the snake uses to Chavas, doesn't that fruit look good? Isn't it ta'avala inayim? Isn't it desirous to your eyes? Eat it. What's the only reason why you're not eating it? Because Hashem said so? But you want it. We want things, and we do exactly what we want. What makes you so different? We were different. I took a whole book and just condensed it into 2 minutes. It's not for now. That's not for now. It's a whole thing. What's relevant for us right now is listen to the way the Medrash now addresses this. And the second paragraph of the Medrash. I made you king over the domesticated and the wild animals. You were king. Velo bikashta. You didn't seek it. I gave it to you. It wasn't that you asked. I made you into that role. I made you able to walk upright like Adam. You didn't seek that. I gave it to you. And what did you do with all that I gave you? You enticed Adam and Chava, you caused them to sin, and your punishment is going to be, I'm going to take away all those things that I gave you, and you're not going to have it. Now you're going to be on your belly. Now you had been able to eat foods like Adam, and now your punishment is you're going to eat the dust of the earth. What you sought to kill a man to be able to wed Chava, your punishment is now going to be the hatred between man and between snake. And the Medrash concludes, that which he sought was not given to him, and that which he already possessed was taken away from him.
I have an aversion to snakes.
Yes.
We all hate snakes.
Correct. The Torah says there's going to be a hatred between mankind and snakes always. You're going to be after his heel, he's going to be after your head. Kachahi.
Did the snake have some sort of free choice?
Beyond our discussion, there, right? I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. That would be my simple answer to that. Says the Medrash, this last line, I gave you all of these things, and you wanted more. You wanted Chava. You wanted whatever's what you wanted. all the things that I gave you. You never asked for. I gave them to you. Now, not only will you not get what you want, you're going to lose the things that you already had. And then the Medrash adds, so too do we find by Cain, by Korach, by Bilam, by Doeg, Achitofel, Gehazi, Avshalom, Adonio, Uzio, and Haman. The Medrash gives a long list, and there's a common thread. We're not going to go through all of these, but there's a common thread between people who had and had been given a lot and wanted a little bit more. And when they tried to take a little bit more, Haman, of course, is the most classic example, the second in command. And he says, all of this is worth nothing if I can't have Mordechai. You have it all. It's worth nothing to me, he says about him. Kai, there are only how many people in the entire world? And the sages discussed, we discussed before, they were arguing with his brother Hevel over this world and the next world. Whatever it was that he had, wanted, Korach, was Ravlach. B'nai Levi, you're the tribe of Levi. You're in such an exalted position. And Korach said, I want it all. We can go through one after another. Each one, there's a common thread exactly where that was. The Medrash says, so the idea of the snake, and the scream, the Medrash is graphic. When he lost his arms and his legs, Hashem could have taken them away without any pain. He did it 2 psukim prior with the creation of Chava. Adam was put to sleep, no pain. What's the pain of the snake? He lost something that he had been given a gift. He had been given the gift, the ability to walk and to eat and to talk, made him king over the animal kingdom. I believe the pain that the Medrash is describing, the scream from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, is not just the scream of the physical loss of his limb, it's the scream of the loss of what this now means, that I've lost the ability to walk, I've lost the ability to eat, to communicate. I had it all. I had it all, and I wanted more. And now I lost what I had. And the scream, the sages describe the scream from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. Very graphic, but very poignant scream. Now back to what the sages connect, and they say, Aaron throws his staff down before Paro, and it becomes a snake. And the sages are bothered by the question that we are bothered by. That's the big mofes? That's the big miracle, the big wonder? Paro laughs, and he says, we know how to do that. My kids know how to do that. And the Medrash says, you're missing the point, Paro. This is not about showing something that's going to blow your sock off. So I'm giving you a message. There's a message in the snake. In the same way that Moshe got the message of the aspect of the snake of Lashon Hara, you also getting a message. The snake had it all. He was the most powerful animal figure in the animal kingdom, and he lost it all. Paro, what's the position that Paro is in right now in the world order? There was a famine throughout the known world, and what has happened because of that famine? Paro's got it all. He is the most powerful nation known to man at that point. He owns it all. Who gave it to him? Yosef, Hashem, the famine. I gave it to you. You are now sitting at the height of power. You have it. And I'm telling you now, my people are leaving. We're going home. And if you don't listen, by the time this story is over, what's going to be of biblical Paro? The scream of Paro at the sea, with the last of his chariots drowned, the last of his men, his economy, by the time the plagues are over, he's got nothing. Animals, crops, it's done. There's a warning in the snake. It's not just a mofes of, wow, I'm going to blow your socks off and create something you've never seen before. There's a message that you need to hear. You have what I've given you. Don't lose it. Now, go back to the Gemara. How does a Jew bow down and where? He bows down like a staff and comes up like a snake. And you say, out of all, the sages could have said that straight. They could have said, when you bow down, bow down like straight, and come up head first. They could have just expressed it exactly what they want. They don't say that. They say, go down like a staff, come up like a snake. Now, anyone reading the Gemara, staff, snake, down like a staff, up like a snake. What's that a reminder of? That immediately takes us back to this episode, both with Moshe, now here with Aaron, down like a staff, up like a snake. Where do we bow down? At what point in the davening? Now, break down the Tishmona Esrei. There are three components. The first components are praise, in which we recognize Hashem as Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, the Magen Avram, the Shield of Avram, the Machayim Esim, the Gevura, the strength of Hashem, and the Holy, the Kel HaKadosh of Holiness. And then the last three blessings are thanks.
Oh, sorry, thanks.
Hoda, we give thanks for everything that we have. So we have praise and thanks. And then the 13 blessings in the middle.
Petition.
I want. Right? That's what it is. I want health, I want parnasa, I want this. Some of them are more exalted wants. I want to go back to Yerushalayim, I want Mashiach. But it's that's where we say, this is what I want. Praise, I want, thanks. Where do we bow? In the beginning, when we open up with praise, and then when we open up with thanks. You can ask all you want. And Hashem wants nothing from us other than to ask the things that we want. We've said many times, Hashem desires the tefillah of the righteousness. All of the imahos, all of our matriarchs were barren, were without children. Hashem desired their tefillah. All He wants is us to reach out and to say, I want, I need, help me, this is what I want. And you can, and you must, and we do. But what do we do before and after all of those, I want?
We praise
and thank. And how do we do that? Down like a staff, and up like a snake. The message is always, always the message, I've given you things that you haven't even asked for. Don't lose them by wanting more. We can ask. So how do we avoid that? We praise and we thank. We recognize and we praise and we thank. And then in between, we can ask for all the things that we need to ask for. It's okay to ask. We're supposed to ask. But you can never ask like a paro or like a snake. You can't ask like that. Always with appreciation of what you already have and in praise of the Master of Masters, the Holy of Holies, the Holy One, blessed be He. And so we, with that in mind, the sages say, yes, I want you to bow down. And the way the words they use, down like a staff, up like a snake, is a constant reminder, as it was a message to Paro, as it was a message to the original snake, I've given you so much. Don't take more. You could lose it. And yet, but we need to ask. I need to ask for help. Whatever health I have, I want more. You're allowed to. You're allowed to want. If it's in the context of, thank you for what I have. I praise you and acknowledge you for who you are and what I have. And then in between, we ask all the things that we want. But it has to be that way. And the sages, in their beautiful language, painted us that picture in teaching us how to bow and where we bow, that message, that memory always of down like the staff, up like a snake, you go down right away. Up, so there are two levels. One is the choreography is there. Go straight down and you come up slowly. But buried in that lesson is the imagery of what we're supposed to have from this week's parsha of what Moshe and Aaron were trying to teach Paro, not by blowing his socks off with a miracle he had never seen before, but with a message of don't let your screams of when you lose that which you already have be heard from one end to the other end. How do you avoid that? Go down like a snake, like a staff, and come up like a snake. Beautiful idea. I thank my friend, Dr. Barry Yaffe, for sharing these, putting that all together. And wish you a wonderful week.
I have 2 points I want to ask you. One is that the snake now...